I'm Elizabeth Emery, producer and host of Hear Her Sports, the podcast about exceptional female athletes and women in sports. Greetings, everybody. The Olympics are coming. Thank you very much to listener Melanie's request. I spoke to speed skater Ellen Arrigas from Denmark shortly after she qualified for the mass start event in Pyeongchang next month. The mass start is so fun to watch. There's lots of jockeying for position, tight corners, speed, endurance, and sprinting. It's quite a bit like the Criterium in cycling or some of the track cycling events. Anyway, Elena talks about much of this. She also offers some advice on how to watch and what to look for while she's racing. Elena's introduction to speed skating was inline skating. It's like rollerblading, but really fancy. We talk about her start, some specifics of that sport, and differences between skating on the road and on the ice. To find more details and see a picture of the dryland training she describes, go to podcast page on hearhersports.com. Elena travels quite a bit. When we spoke, she was in San Francisco and starts off talking about what she's doing there. So here she is.
I was visiting my brother for a few days, who lives here in San Francisco. And so he went to celebrate Christmas with his wife's family in Australia. So they left us. and I'm just here with my boyfriend and we're biking, doing weights, doing a little off-skate. Just getting some sun and yeah.
Nice. One of the things that I noticed in the bio that you sent me is that your entire family skated, and it sounded like that started because your grandparents started skating. Is that true?
Yeah, they started and then, yeah, everyone started.
And how did they start? And how old were they?
I'm actually not sure how they started. I think that it was one of their friends, because they were really active. They're probably about 50 years, like in their 50s, something like that, when they started. And they were already in a running club. And I think it was one of their friends there that told them about speed skating or roller skating. They just, I don't know, went to a training and then they brought all of us.
I think that's awesome. Yeah. And you're talking about roller skating, but fancy roller skating. I'm imagining those inline skates with fancy wheels and stuff. Is that true?
Yeah. When they started, it was, I think, 5 wheels inline. And now they were really small wheels at that time. So now it's just gotten bigger and bigger. And the bigger the wheels, the less that we have. We went up to 4 and then now it's 3. And they're really huge.
Oh, my goodness.
So people are always amazed with how they look. It's like 125 millimeters, I think it's the diameter. They're really huge.
Yeah. So tell me what it feels like differently to skate on ice versus on the road at that kind of speed. I mean,
I think probably the on the road you can do anything you want technique wise because you have a wheel and then it grips no matter how you position your foot and what kind of push that you have. But on the ice we have only 2 edges, so you have to be really skate really technically well to skate fast as well. And I think that's what I've struggled with a lot in the transition from inline to ice. So the technique is really, really different, and you have to be a lot better at it than I was on inline.
That's funny. And you didn't like ice skating when you first started?
No. My mom loves telling the story. She'll tell it to anyone who will listen. when I first tried to ice skate, I was like, I wasn't good because it was the first time. And I was really young, or not really young, but I was young and stubborn. So I said, I hate this shit. I never, ever want to do it again. Because the guys I was usually training with, they're a lot faster, and obviously I didn't like that. So, like, no.
And so it sounds like you're still having to work a lot on technique. So how do you do that?
Usually just videotaping of me skating during training. So my coach will videotape like a straight, and then we'll look at it together and say, this is wrong. Try to do a little bit more like this. Usually he says to me, just wait. because you have to wait a lot on skating. You have to stay on one foot, then wait for the push of your kind of body weight. It's really technical, but wait for that push so you feel there's a lot of pressure on that one leg, because that's where you get the most speed.
Can you mimic it in on the road, you know, like in the inline skates?
You can, but I'm also really, really terrible at that. It'll just go a lot slower, which we're not used to, an inline. And you'll, the wheels that we have, they'll get worn down really quick.
Oh, okay.
So that can get a little expensive.
Right.
When we train on inline, we do have some trainings where we focus a lot on the ice technique. Then we have some trainings, the faster ones, where we'll do sprints and stuff. Then we'll just go back to the inline technique.
Right. So talk a little bit more about the technique that you're trying to improve, because I think that's sort of interesting about that it's hard for you. And I don't know, I'd like to hear more about that.
It's mainly the straights, because we come from inline and the corners are a little bit sharper on the inline tracks. So we're really good at corners and don't have to work that much on those. So we focus mainly on the straights and to improve that. And this year, I think my coach has been a lot more focused on that. So the first few weeks we went on ice, we just did really slow and technical trainings and really worked a lot on that straight and videotaped it, looked at it, tried something new, videotaped that, and constantly trying to improve everything. But that was really intense those first few weeks, but then we've been working on it a little bit throughout the season, but now it's kind of my technique is what it is.
Right. Yeah.
Because there's so few months left. But it's really, really improved from just doing that the past, or this year, really, really working on the straights. It's improved a lot. And not only my coach tells me that, other people told me. So I think that's kind of reassuring. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I think, you know, videotaping is so helpful, seeing yourself, because you can sort of pretend that you're doing it great, and then you see yourself and you're like, oh geez.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's your coach?
It's my cousin. So it's my my mom's sister's son.
Mm-hmm.
He's been coaching me basically most of my skating career, both on inline and on ice.
Mm-hmm. How did you guys all end up being so good? I mean, it seems remarkable that for one small town to have such success.
I don't know. the two other guys that are going to the Olympics with me are the guys that I've been training with my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we're just the three people that no, I know there are a lot more people that went all in, but the three who succeeded this year. I mean, it's just a lot of hard work, and we had each other all the time, which I think is pretty spectacular for skating, because it's such an individual sport and we've always kind of leaned on each other, had each other to help and support, and I think that's a pretty big factor in doing well.
Do you think your coach was a big factor? I mean, you guys are all using the same coach, right?
Yeah, definitely he is. He's been very, very passionate about this project, and was the one to make this transition program from inline to ice, even though we had no ice here. But he was the one starting everything, and he makes all of our programs like 100%. Yeah, he quit his job also for us to be a full-time coach.
Wow.
For most of the years. But he's put a lot of hard work in it.
That's awesome. Really. And did you personally know that you wanted to go pro, that you wanted to go for the Olympics from early on?
Not really. I remember on inline, it was probably 2013. I skated as a junior, a fifth place in a points race at the European Championships. And I remember my coach coming to me and saying, that I was selected also for the first time to be on the World Championships team. And he said, okay, now there is 5 months to the World Championships, but there's also 4 years till the next Olympics. And that was like the first time. It's like, okay.
That's cool. That's great, yeah. That he sort of, I don't know, put it in your head, I guess.
Yeah, he kind of did. But still, I think it didn't occur to me that would even be a possible goal until, I don't know, quite a bit later. But I would never have thought of it as an option before he told me that I could be good enough for that to even happen.
And are you full-time now training?
No. I study as well, which I kind of depend on. We have this amazing system in Denmark that when you study, you get paid every month. So that's basically my kind of job.
You're making me jealous.
Yeah, it's really amazing, and people get very jealous when I tell them, and they won't believe me. But that's kind of how I can get enough money to travel and skate. So I have to do both.
Right. Well, let's talk about the Olympics. The Olympics are coming up in a couple of months. What are the events that you're hoping to compete in?
I just qualified for one event, and that's the mass start.
Mm-hmm.
From the beginning of the year, we were kind of hoping that I could qualify for one other distance. But I'm not quite there yet. I'm really, really close, but not quite there.
Right.
But the mass start is kind of, it's very similar to inline, because it's like a points race on inline. And we are, contrary to the more traditional speed skating events, where you're only two people on the track, you don't have any physical contact, and you just basically race against the time. This event, the mass start event, is 24 people. No, I think they changed it to 16 people that are racing all together in the what we call the warm-up lane. So that will be the inside lane of the track. And then there's these point sprints every fourth lap. It's 16 laps altogether, so it's every fourth lap, and the last sprint will be at the finish line. And the three people that cross the finish line first will be the podium. So it's very similar to inline, where we kind of race like the cycling track races. We have points race and yeah, stuff like that.
Do you like racing with all those people around in close quarters? And I expect there's a lot of jostling.
Yeah, I love it. Because I'm way better at it than I am any of the other events. It's really fun, because you get to, I don't know, position different places, and you have the tactic that you have to follow, and yeah, all the cool stuff.
Yeah, what are the tactics?
So if you go for one of the points or the intermediate sprint, then you'll be in the top 10 usually. And if you go and wait for the last sprint, then you're going for the podium. So you kind of have to choose between those two tactics, I think. Yeah, because it's really hard to do both. Yeah.
Do you get cooked if you go for the intermediate sprint and can't reposition?
Yeah, it can be really hard. It also depends who you're sprinting against, because there are very different types of skaters, and some sprints might be way harder than they have to, because you're sprinting against people that are way faster than you. Because the mass start is very mixed with people. You have some sprinters, you have some middle distance skaters, and you have some long distance skaters. So you kind of also want to think about who is next to you in a sprint, and if it's worth to go all out. If you're going to get a fourth position, then you won't get any points.
So what's your tactic going to be in at the Olympics? You going for the podium?
I can't tell you.
I understand. So how do you advise us to watch Olympic speed skating for the mass start? Like, will there be qualifying, or are only 24 people qualified?
24 people are qualified now, but they'll be qualified for the semifinal. So we'll have a semifinal first, where the top 8 from each heat will go to the final. So we'll be 16 in the final.
Oh, okay. I imagine that will change tactics quite a bit.
Yeah, because all of a sudden it's not just one race. It's going to be two races, and it's going to be on the same day. And they didn't announce this until quite late, I think, that they'll do it like this, because last year they announced that it would be the 24 that qualified for the Olympics will be the 24 in the final. But I think it'll make it more exciting, especially for you guys just viewing. It'll be more exciting to have semifinals and a final. And so it will really be the top 16 skaters in the world that'll be in the final.
That's cool. Do people fall down a lot in the mass start racing?
Last year they didn't, but this year has been, there's been a lot of crashes.
Huh.
Almost in every race, I think. Yeah.
Have you fallen?
No.
That's good.
I've been close to many times, but.
So what causes you to fall? Do you hit somebody else's skate, or do you just wobble all on your own, or what happens?
There are different types of crashes, I guess. Sometimes you can skate into someone next to you, so you hit the skate, and that'll kind of put you out of balance. And if you're really tired, as you are sometimes, that can just do the trick, I guess. Then you'll not have enough power to re-stabilize yourself, and you'll just crash. And then sometimes I've seen people just be so exhausted that they couldn't, like, stay on their skates. And because of the corners, because we skate in the warm-up lane, it's really, really tight corners than what we'll usually be used to. So sometimes the grip kind of just fails, so you just fall.
Do you think you have an advantage having come from inline with those corners and the mass start race?
I think so, yeah, because people who've grown up on just ice, they've never trained to do sharp corners or tight corners, because we skate on the outside lanes, which are way bigger. They're not as used to it as we are coming from inline, because we have two types of tracks on inline, the big road tracks that are kind of similar to the ice tracks. And then we have the tracks that we call them, which are 200 meters with really sharp corners. So we're really used to that, which is good.
Yeah. Do you like competing?
Sometimes. It's not fun when I get really, really nervous, because I can get that nervous that my legs start to just shut off, and I can't use them, kind of, or I don't feel like I have, I can use my skills to the fullest, because they kind of just shut off because I get so nervous. And at that point, it's not fun anymore. But I mean, that's a part of the game, and I'm constantly working on all of these things to not have that happen. But when you're trying to qualify for the Olympics, it's kind of hard not to be nervous.
Yeah, you know, I saw you in the qualifying race. I found it online, and you looked really calm, actually.
Yeah, I look really... People always tell me that I look really calm, but I'm not.
Well, that's good. I mean, you also looked really, really good at positioning yourself in the pack, I'll have to say.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've brought from inline, which are one of the best things, probably. Because what's important on the mass start event is that you really are able to relax. So you have that extra punch when you decide to go for a sprint, whether it's the intermediate ones or the final sprint. You really need to gather a lot of power, yeah.
Have you thought about doing the short track racing?
I've tried it. Not super, super great. It's way, way harder on the legs because you have so much, because of the tight corners, you have so much pressure on your legs. And you have to be even better technically, which I'm not. But I have thought about it because it would be definitely be easier to do that in Denmark because we have the rinks for it.
Oh.
We have the hockey rinks, which are the same ones, basically. So that would be easier, but I like long track more.
Yeah. So the long track rinks are bigger than a hockey rink?
Yeah. Yeah. They're like like the track and fields track. It would be the same size. So it's 400 meters.
Oh, that's big.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's the Olympics in a few months. So what's it like, you know, having qualified, and do you feel a little bit relieved from some of the pressure now that you're qualified?
A little bit, but it's still, I feel like it hasn't occurred to me that I'm qualified. Kind of waiting for that reaction to happen. But I think I'll get there next month. We'll meet with the National Sports Federation of Denmark, and they'll give us all our clothes, and we'll take pictures and all that stuff. So I hope that then it will occur to me that I'm actually going.
That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, because right now it's super weird.
I mean, do you think that it's important to know that you're going to the Olympics, or do you want to sort of forget that it's the Olympic? Like, how does it being the Olympics affect sort of your mental state?
I think I would rather feel like I do now, that it hasn't really occurred to me. Yeah, I guess you just got to think of it as any other race. Of course, it's important, but I think that it will help a lot with not being as nervous, and helping with focusing more on the race, on the tactics and all that stuff, instead of focusing on, wow, it's Olympics, and I guess I can do that after the race.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, I mean, you could really, an Olympic athlete could really do themselves a disservice by focusing on the Olympic aspect of it.
Yeah.
You have 2 more months. What are you going to be doing for the next 2 months?
I'll be here in California a few more days, and then I'll go back for Christmas. But I'll only be home for about, I think it's 4 days. Yeah, it must be 4 days. And then I'm going to South Germany to skate. And usually what we do is we have, because we don't have any ice in Denmark, we have 10 days at home and then 10 days on ice somewhere in Europe. It'll be a little less days home this time, but so I'll have two blocks of ice in January. We'll be home between those two. And then we're going the 7th of February. We're leaving for the Olympics. But actually, it will be two different cities, because in Pyeongchang, they have all the ski sports, or alpine sports, I guess you call it. And in, okay, I don't know how to say this correctly, Gangneung, we'll have all the ice stuff, so curling and hockey and all that stuff, short track, long track, yeah. And they're actually, the cities are, I think, 1 hour apart.
And how important is it going to be for you to get on the very specific ice of the Olympic races?
Not super important. I was there for the World Championships last year. It's a really good ice. It's really it's a fast ice, which doesn't really matter for us because we're not skating against time. We're skating against each other. But the one thing I'm a little concerned about is that the corners aren't as tight as they are on other tracks, which is usually to my advantage that they're tight. So when they're not, everyone else gets a little bit better at handling the corners. It gets a little bit easier for everyone whereas in Canada, the corners were really tight and people were really struggling, where I felt a little bit more comfortable than everyone else, I think, which was nice.
What makes ice fast?
Yeah, it's a really stupid thing to say, I guess, that ice is fast. Because it's not the ice that gets faster, it's the air. There's less air. For example, when there's altitude, there's less air, so there's less air resistance, and you skate faster. If it rains, the... I'm not sure, but something about the pressure of the air. So there's, again, less air. Yeah, and then there are these little factors as how thick or thin the ice is. We want the ice thinner for it to be faster. And, yeah, we just want the ice to be really smooth.
And you notice all that as soon as you get on the ice? Like, you're like, wow, this is fast ice?
I don't notice it, I guess, physically. Because to me, ice is ice, I guess. But I know some of the skaters that have been on ice their whole lives, they say they feel it a little bit more, but I just see it on my times. That's the only way I know if it's a fast or slow ice.
Are you good with speed, or does it freak you out? I mean, how fast are you guys going?
I think we are going probably 60, but that's in kilometers per hour. So it's pretty fast. I don't think anyone gets scared from the speed.
Okay. Do you get scared on the speed on the asphalt? Are you guys going, you're going faster, right?
No, on ice. It's faster on ice, way faster.
Okay.
But I never get scared because, like, when I generate the speed myself, I don't really get scared. But we train a lot on bikes, for example. And if we're going down a mountain, I can get a little scared because it's not me generating the speed. It's the mountain. So it's a little less in my control, I guess.
Talk about a little bit about your training, not necessarily for the next 2 months, but in general, like, what do you guys focus on and things like that?
Yeah, so the majority of our training is actually biking.
Oh.
Yeah, because the thing with ice is that you can't be on it too long because you'll just wear yourself out completely. It's really hard to be on ice because you have to be in position all the time.
Oh, that crouched position, you mean?
Yeah. Which is really hard on the legs. So you can't be on ice for a really long time, but you can on the bike. So that's where we put most of our endurance training. It's on the bike. Then we do a lot of inline skating in the summer, and then more ice in the winter. We do a lot of weights, and then we do this type of off-skate training where we kind of imitate the movements that we would do on ice. So when we don't have ice, it's good to use that to still use the same muscles. So that's what I'm doing here in San Francisco, to still train the muscles that I use on ice so I don't get that shock when I come back on the ice.
Right. So what kind of exercises is the off-skate training?
So we'll stay in our position, and then we'll typically do some kind of jumps or... Yeah, I would do more jumps because I don't do well with the, kind of stabilizing exercises where you just stand in the position for a few minutes. My body don't respond that well to that, so I'll do more jumps and sprinting, yeah, all this kind of stuff that's more explosive, yeah.
And you're going to a gym for that?
No, we just do it outside.
Oh.
Then we have this exercise, which is looks kind of weird, and people stare a lot when they walk past us. So we have this elastic band. So I need a partner. So we have an elastic band around our waist that connects us. So one big one, if you can imagine that. And then the person at the other end will hold me. I will walk with my side, so I kind of have my hip inward, kind of like I'm going into the corner. So we're training corners that way. So I do the movements, the crossovers, to train leaning in the corner.
No wonder you brought your boyfriend with you. You need that other person.
Yeah.
And what about strength training? What are you doing for strength training?
Again, a lot of jumps. It depends because we, in the beginning of the season, it will be more static movements. So it will be squats, deadlift, stuff like that. Always free weights, but it will be more heavy exercises in the summer, whereas now it's more explosive exercise. So I'll do squat jumps instead of just squats. Mm. I do a lot of jumps as well in the gym. So kind of sideways jumps and box jumps, because that's the better thing for me. I like jumps.
Right. How high can you jump? Like, what's the box height?
In the beginning, it's quite low, but I usually be able to jump a little bit higher than my belly button.
Oh, that's high.
Yeah. But I'm not super explosive, so.
Right. And do people stare at you, thinking like, wow, she can jump high or something?
Sometimes they do. I've had some people, not here, but ask me if I was a weightlifter, a professional weightlifter, mm-hmm. which is kind of funny because I have really, really tiny arms. We all of skaters do. So I find that kind of funny because I have a really tiny upper body and then huge legs.
Like cyclists and all of us strange yeah. lower body people. And what about in the summer? What kind of training are you doing in the summer? And do you take any time off?
Yeah, we usually take time off in March, April-ish, somewhere between that. Just not completely off, but then I'll just go off a program. So I kind of just train whatever I feel like, which I'm actually doing now as well. Which is more, I think, mentally, when you've had this really long period of intensive training and then intensive competition, then you just need to, I don't know, cool down a little bit. So I have these few trainings. So two types of bike trainings and then a weight training and the off-skate training. And I just know that I have to do either one of those each day. So every day I wake up, I kind of feel, what do I want to do today? Do I want to bike? Do I want to do weights? Which is kind of nice. And that's usually what I'll also do in the spring when we have that little break. But in the summer, we just do a lot of inline training, a lot of off-skate training, and a lot of biking. That's the three main things that we do.
And how long are your, like time-wise, how long are your races and you know, like how important is the endurance aspect of your training?
The mass start is the longest, I think. It's 8 minutes. But the endurance is really, really important because it's really hard to skate on ice. And that's why the distances aren't as long. The longest race on ice for women is 5 kilometers. And I think the mass start is 6 point something kilometers. Whereas on inline, the longest race is a marathon.
Oh.
So it's very, it just shows, I think, how hard it is to skate on ice. You really get more tired from doing that. And that's why you need the endurance a lot to be able to skate those 8 minutes well.
Right. And how long are your bike rides?
I think longest one I've done this year is 4.5 hours. Mm-hmm. But they'll usually be just 3 hours most of the time. Then sometimes I'll have like a recovery ride, which will be 1.5 hour. That's probably the shortest that I have.
Right. And are you yeah. doing intervals on the bike or is that only on the ice?
We do that, yeah. We do it later in the season, so not during the summer. We'll do it in the transition, I think, between summer and fall. We'll start doing threshold intervals and these 30 seconds all out intervals as well. But it depends on, yeah, where we are in our training when we do it. Right now I'm going back to pretending like it's summer. So I do these really long bike rides and the heavy weights. So I kind of start over to be able to perform well at the Olympics.
Cool. Are you traveling with a bike and all this other equipment?
Yeah. Yeah, I have this huge bike pack and then a suitcase, which also makes people stare a lot.
Yes.
Because it's really unusual to have this huge bag. Yeah, people ask me if it's instruments.
Right. I always found that really cumbersome to be traveling with all the equipment. And I mean, to me, that was one of the real negatives of competing was having to have all that equipment.
Yeah, it gets annoying sometimes. Also, when you stay in really tiny hotel rooms, it's hard to fit the bike back. And then when you pull out the bike and assemble it, then you have a bike as well. It's hard to find space to put all this stuff. But the worst thing about it is probably just to and from the airport. But usually when we're traveling to World Cups, they'll pick us up. The federation that hosts will pick us up in buses, because we usually come at the same time as other teams. So they pick us up all together and ship us kind of to the hotels, which is nice. But for the training camps, it can get kind of hard carrying all this stuff in and out of trains and from trains to hotels. And yeah.
Have you gotten good about coming into a new city and finding out new rides and what gym to go to and all that kind of stuff?
I don't travel to a lot of new cities. We go to the same places. Always. Usually when we go to places with ice rinks, the gym will be inside the rink, so it will be that's kind of nice. So it's easy that way. Everything is at the same place.
How is your nutrition, and do you think about that a lot? Do you think about what you're eating?
A little bit. I did it a lot more a few years back, but I kind of drove me crazy to always think about how many calories is in this and how much sugar and all that stuff. So I've kind of right now I just the days that I train a little bit less intensive, I will eat a little bit less as well. And the days where I really need the energy, where I have really hard trainings, I'll eat a little bit more. And that's kind of the main thing that I think about. I don't eat a lot of cake or sugar or fat anyway. But if I'm at like a Christmas Eve or at a relative's birthday party or something like that, I'll eat cake. It's not like I won't do that at all, because it'll just drive me crazy not to be able to have a little bit fun.
Right. What's your favorite breakfast?
I'll usually just have oatmeal, which I have in front of me right now, actually. I think that's also just my favorite breakfast. I eat it every single day.
Yeah, me too.
It's really good.
It is good. Do you add stuff to it?
Yeah, right now I have some chia seeds and almonds and a few raspberries. So
very nice.
Yeah.
And what's your favorite recovery snack or meal?
I don't eat a lot of those. Probably just bananas.
Very good. Well, I think it's exciting that you're going to the Olympics. I'm hoping that you're excited too, even though it hasn't sunk in yet.
Yeah, really excited. I am.
Well, thank you very much and good luck. And I'm really excited to watch you.
Thank you.
Yep. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Yeah. See you. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, please tell your pals about it. No, really. I mean, right now, send an email to one friend just to say these women are awesome. And also remember to sign up for the newsletter and get the link to a Spotify playlist of favorite workout songs of some of my guests. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Bye-bye.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!